You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and professionals in the publishing industry. You guys might recognize a familiar face. David is back on the show tonight. Hey, David, how are we doing?
Hey, just lurking in the dungeon.
It looks like it.
I had no choice. My daughter wanted to watch Barbie. She calls it Barbie Roberts.
You know what? You got to give the girl what she wants.
All of you guys will be hearing about it right now.
Well, we're glad to have you back. So what have you been up to lately? Give us a little catch up.
Oh, man. So I finally got the Sky Hunter back online. That's available in the Kindle store. I'm learning C# for programming. I'm learning 3D modeling for my board game. I'm just going to make the card art with that. I'm also learning how to compose video game music. And in a week, I'm going to Georgia.
So jack of all trades then?
I hope so. I want to be a one-man studio.
There you go. Tell me a little bit, what happened with the Sky Hunter? What was the issue you had there getting it republished?
The issue was, actually, I don't even know. I don't even think they know. So I submitted it, and then it said it was blocked. And then I sent them a message saying, hey, I submitted my story. Why is it blocked? And then all of a sudden, it wasn't anymore.
Oh, okay. So simple fix then. Maybe it was just a glitch in the system.
Well, I mean, my name is so common. I'm thinking that they thought that another David Jones was trying to claim the story. That's my guess.
Huh. Interesting.
I don't know.
What I expected to be the issue is because we had pulled it from the anthology where it was published under a different title. I expected that to be what caused the issue, but obviously it wasn't.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. So I'm happy. I actually am way behind in telling people about it. So go buy it.
We're going to have to fill you in on all the marketing stuff we've learned over the last 6 months, but it's good to have you back.
Yes, happy to be back.
So let's jump right in. We've got two new guests to introduce everybody to. Let's start off with Elizabeth Tammy. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for having me. So my name is Elizabeth. I am currently a sophomore at Mercer University in Georgia, though I'm currently studying abroad at Oxford. I study journalism and creative writing, of course. And so my novel, Outrun the Wind, comes out this November from Flux Books, and essentially it's just a young adult reimagining of the story of Atalanta from Greek mythology. I've always really liked her story, but I felt like there was a lot of confusing aspects to it, and so I sort of reconfigured it to make it make more sense to me, added new characters, the whole shebang, and now it's just this novel of mythological mayhem. So yeah.
That is awesome. Now we're always told we have to have that one sentence log line. So what is yours for your book?
Something I always struggle with. Oh, I actually have it written down somewhere.
There you go, smart.
Yeah, I get this question a lot, and you would think I would be better at the elevator pitch by now, but I'm really not.
That's the thing that we really push a lot with when we're trying to sell our work. We have to have that log line. We have to know immediately when someone says, tell me about your book, what to say, because if we don't, you tend to lose people. Although when you mentioned Greek mythology, boom, I was right there.
Awesome. yeah, I'm not gonna be able to find it. Gosh, we had it written for it.
It's funny when you know it until someone calls you out on it and you're like,
I know, yeah.
I'm like, oh wait, what? I wrote a book?
I did? Yeah, what? Yeah, no, I haven't even thought
about it.
Feel
like a YA interpretation. Atlantia is good enough. Like that seems
that's usually what I tell people. Okay. I would just say, basically when Kahina, who is a huntress of Artemis, disobeys direct orders to save Atalanta on a routine mission, they find out that now, for better or worse, their two lives are sort of irreversibly intertwined, and they have to take on this man that is responsible for both of their dark pasts and figure out how to do that together.
Nice. Very good.
Oh, yeah. Elevator pitches, definitely my weak spot.
It's
but
the hardest thing, I swear.
Yeah, it's hard to sum up everything in a sentence, but that's what we've got to do.
Another important component that you totally nailed is this cover art. I love it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I got Jake Nordby. He was my cover designer with Flux, and he did a really great job. I'm very happy with it.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
Now, I want to put a pin in that, because working with a small press publisher, I want to know how much input you have into these things. But I also want to introduce Maxine real quick, too, before we dive right in. So let's hold on to that for 1 second. And Maxine, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, hi, my name is Maxine Kaplan. I currently have a cold, so all of my M's are going to sound like B's. I live in Brooklyn and in New York, and I have a day job as a private investigator. And my first novel, my YA novel, came out with Amulet this week, and it's called The Accidental Bad Girl. And I also mightily struggle with the log line. I have like three that I intertwine, and hopefully, like, if I use three of them, people get the idea. I say, A, it's a feminist revisionist take on North by Northwest. It's an origin story for femme fatale and a thriller about slut shaming. So if you take all three of those, you can kind of get where it's coming from.
And they're all probably very, very different too. Better.
I know. That's the weird thing about it. Is that a lot of what my book deals with doesn't usually get dealt with in a genre specific way. So it's been kind of hard to not sell it, but explain it, I suppose. And my cat right here, who might be making an appearance.
like we said before, the internet loves cats. So now both of you guys are traditionally published.
Yes.
And you said it was a small to medium press. I want to touch a little bit on the journey that you guys got into publishing. So if you have an agent, how did you find your agent? Maxine, I think you said you did.
I did. Just the traditional way, just traditional slush pile querying. For about, you know, about 9 months. At one point I got a writer from who really helped me sort of redesign the book, sort of repace it, because pacing was always my weak spot in the first couple of drafts. So her revise and resubmit really helped me, and she ultimately didn't take it on. But and after that I was sort of demoralized. I was like, well, I kind of blew through my entire list of agents. I can't resubmit this altogether better manuscript. But almost on a whim, I sent out another batch a week later, and a day later I got I love this, let me get the full manuscript. And then my agent basically live blogged it to me via email as she was reading it, and then 2 days later she offered representation. So it was very, very slow and then very, very fast, but really just slush pile. No, I didn't get any tricks. I didn't get any, you know, contests or workshops or anything like that. I just sent a lot of blind letters.
Okay. Well, it's good to know, because a lot of people kind of feel a little bit dejected about the whole querying system, that it doesn't work, or, you know, the slew of rejections just kind of kills your self-esteem. So to know that, yeah, it may take 9 months, but it can happen. That's a good thing for our viewers to know, that, you know, patience and, you know, persistence can work. Now, once you got your agent, how long was it from agent to book sale?
That was about another year, because we revised it again. And then just various life things got in the way for both me and my agent, which is a long story. And so it took a minute to send it out. And then it took about 3 months from submitting it to various publishers before we got a sale.
Okay.
It was during the summer too. So that's a very slow time in publishing. Nobody's there on Fridays, full stop. When they're there during the week, they're just filling in for whoever's on vacation, basically. So it's a very slow time to submit in publishing.
Well, I've noticed that summer tends to be... Oh, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, your book just launched, so congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so cool.
Thank you very much.
I'm intrigued by both of your guys' synopses. I want to read both of these books.
Thanks. I appreciate it. No, I've been wanting to read Elizabeth since I heard about it, because I'm a big Greek mythology fan from when I was a kid. I was obsessed with it, so I'm very excited about any YA retellings.
Thank you. And I actually got a chance to read an advanced copy of, I think I got an e-arc from you a while ago of The Axe and the Bad Girl, and I loved reading that. So yeah, I'm glad that you had a successful release week and everything.
See, and I love how you guys all know each other. So it just further proves that the circle is not that big when it comes to publishing, whether it be indie or traditional. We all kind of run in the same circles.
Well, we got really lucky with our debut group this year, because there's a tradition in YA publishing that everybody whose debut is coming out kind of form an online support group. And I think, I mean, Elizabeth, agree or disagree, but I think we got, based on how I've heard about how other groups sort of devolved into fighting and
we got super lucky
obligations. We have just an amazing group of supportive people that has been an enormously valuable resource for me anyway.
Yeah, definitely. The Electric 18s. And so, yeah, that's been, a godsend for sure. I don't know what I would do without it. Just, because we've got people from the Big Five, but also people from smaller presses like I am. And so getting to see the ins and outs and the struggles we all share has been enormously comforting.
Yes.
That's awesome. And it touches on a point that we talked about on last week's episode, that really being active within your community is going to help you not only in your career, but it's going to help you in just reaching more people, you know, reaching out to, whether it be networking connections, making new friends, or in the issue with the trademark that we talked about last week, understanding how to deal with that. So really, you know, the fact that you guys are involved in a really good community right now is excellent.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we've all had dilemmas where we've had no idea what we were supposed to do, whether it was dealing with an editor and an agent issue or you know, covers getting rejected, an editorial change we didn't want. Like, every single person in this group has had an issue where it's been like, I do not know what the protocol here is. And chances are you found someone who either had gone through it too and was like, I have no solutions, but I'm here for you, or like a critical mass of ideas about it helped come up with a solution that was workable. At least for me, it helped a lot in a couple of different areas.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And also I got to read so many awesome, y'all got to send each other our arcs, and I got to read so many awesome books this year before they even came out, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's been one of the best parts, definitely. And also, I'm kind of lucky since I'm a November 27th release. I can see everyone go through that process sort of before me and learn the major do's and don'ts about release week and everything. So it's been very helpful.
That's exactly how the community should work. So I'm impressed by that. I like that. Elizabeth, we did not touch on how you got your publishing deal. So let's talk to you about that. You are not agented. You went directly to your publisher.
Correct. And it was kind of I have a very weird, unorthodox story. So when I started querying Outrun the Wind, I sort of attacked querying from multiple angles all at once. So I would go to conferences and pitch in person. I would query traditionally. And I was also aware of a lot of pretty well-established like Twitter pitching contests. I don't know if you've heard of like Pitch Wars, but the same team behind that also has like 4 days a year where they do hashtag PitMad. And essentially you try to pitch your book in a tweet and agents and editors go through the hashtag. And if they favorite it, it's basically an invitation to query them. So you're still traditionally querying, but at least it's something that they asked for. It's like something they requested. So it's a bit of a foot in the door when you go to send that email because they're expecting it. So I'm with Flux Books, which is an imprint of North Star Editions, and almost, I want to say most of the authors in with Flux do have agents, but I just got really lucky. My editor, Kelsey Thompson, happened to be scrolling through Twitter at the right time, I guess, and she's an in-house editor, and I queried her directly and was able to work just with her. So she was the one who sort of went through acquisitions with it straight away, so it would be nice to have an agent just to navigate the publishing industry, and I definitely plan on getting one, and I think everyone should aim for that, but sometimes there are weird situations where you can bypass that, but it's not very common.
Does it speed up the process at all from, working directly with the publisher to getting the book published? Because I know there's that window of, they say, 18 to 24 months where it could take your book to get published.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, when after my editor favorited the tweet and I gave her my first three chapters or whatever, she got back to me like a couple months later then asking for the full manuscript. And then it was almost like 9 or 10 months after that, that they were like, okay, we're interested in possibly bringing this to the acquisitions board. Are you still interested? Here's what we were thinking of for edits if we were to sell this. And then eventually they, you know, got the full approval and all that. So it still took a fairly long time, almost, I'm like, I guess just a little over 10 months total from the PitMad contest to getting the book contract. So yeah.
I had never heard of the PitMad contest. That sounds really cool. And I it's like such a modern tool. It's so cool that, you know, you got picked up from that. I love it. Cause it can only happen now, you know, like imagine 10 years ago, like that wouldn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. They're definitely pretty cool. And I mean, I don't want to discourage anyone from querying traditionally, because like in Maxine's case, in most cases, that's the best route to take in this industry, I think. But I mean, so the pitching contests aren't going to make and break you necessarily, but they are kind of a cool tool if you're into it to just make more connections. There's a really good community online for YA.
And it's,
yeah, I know I have followed people who have had really cool like PitMed things. And I mean, I am not in a position to acquire or offer representation to anyone, but I've certainly seen some descriptions of books and been like, well, that person seems interesting.
Yeah, they're cool. I was just going, but when I was first starting to write seriously, I went to a bunch of writers' workshops and retreats and stuff like that, and everyone was talking about these Twitter pitching contests, so I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. It's another thing to do while you're also querying traditionally and doing all sorts of stuff.
Sounds like a fun little challenge, too, to try and squeeze it in. You said it was in the 140 characters?
Yeah.
That's fun. Like a micro elevator pitch.
Yeah, exactly. So that should really help you narrow it down too.
Yeah, it should have. It feels like, gosh, I must have done this in December 2016. I should have reread them for my elevator pitch, but yeah.
So now what do you do? Because Maxine, yours is just released and Elizabeth, yours is coming out. What do you do in preparation for the book release to get ready? Do you have support from your publisher? Do they give you advice? Do you have a PR person that you work with?
You know, a little bit. Like, Abrams has been great. Abrams Amulet has been great. I actually, coincidentally, when I graduated college, I started a job at Abrams, not at the kids' sets department, in the art books department, in the pop culture book. So I had actually met my editor before, like we've been at weddings together and things like that. But she told me that she didn't even realize it was the same Maxine Kaplan until halfway through reading the book, which made me feel better about it. So Abrams and Amulet have been great. They sent me a couple of blog posts to do, and they were very supportive with giving me ARCs, like advanced readers copies to send to people that I had set up on my own. And they were a good resource, but it's a truism for a reason that you really have to do all the promotion for it yourself. I don't know anybody, even at the big five publishers, whose publishing house set up their launch party, for example. It doesn't happen. You have to call the bookstore yourself and you have to call them 8 times until they call you back.
Oh my God.
And you gotta set it all up yourself. And that's no knock on the publishing houses. It's just the reality of the distribution of resources. So even from the big five houses, I think we all have this fantasy that they're like the premium release from Random House or whatever. They're gonna sell at the biggest bookstore in your hometown, and it's gonna be, I mean, they'll help, they'll be there, you know, it'll be great, but a lot of the legwork is gonna be what you have to do it yourself, or it's not gonna get done.
But does it help to say, you know, oh, I'm with such and such publisher, like, so maybe you want to...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah, even crappie. I at one point went, yeah, I went from like bookstore to bookstore with my arcs at one point, and it for no good reason, but for whatever prejudicial reason they had, when they thought I was a self-published author trying to sell on consignment, I had a very different reaction than I was like, hi, this is coming out from Amulet in May.
Exactly.
Here is like the publisher's address and website on the back of a thing to prove that it's real, you know, like, so it does make a huge difference.
Yes, there's definitely, I don't know, you come off as a lot more legit if you can say, oh, I'm being published by so-and-so, you know, so that's pretty
cool. Means somebody gatekeeped your book, basically.
Exactly. So then what have you done to celebrate your book launch? Like, did you do an online Facebook party or any sort of other events, or what have you done for that?
Actually last night I had my launch event at Books of Wonder in New York. So it was really just my friends and family who came. But I'm lucky enough to have a lot of friends and family in the area. So, I had my mother with me, which I couldn't tell was my mother's a journalist. She has a show at the public radio station in New York. So she's interviewed people at these kinds of events before, and I thought it'd be funny to have her interview me. So that's what I did. And then I went to a bar and pre-ordered some food and wine and like had a party. And that's really what I did. That was last night.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. And I mean, like, you know, I'm not trying to say it's cheating, but on social media, like, you have pictures and videos of this event and you can make it look bigger and grander, you know, even than it really was. And I think that would certainly also help propel your sales.
Make your own mini red carpet event, sort of.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying there. And it's not really cheating. Yeah. It's the perception.
Right.
Just the idea of having people like recognize your book cover, essentially, you know, it's like, oh, I've seen pictures of this at something that looked like an event. You know, it's more just familiarity than promotion in a way. That's sort of how I've come to think of it over the last 6 months. Like, it's not, ooh, because if you're on a list, chances are it's because a friend of yours on Facebook was like, I'm looking for books that will fit this list. Anyone has.
A lot of this market is who you
know. So it's not like somebody is like, if people know that your book exists because they've seen it, that's what helps more than, oh, the publisher has decided this is going to be their hit this season. I mean, that helps a lot. There's some people who have gotten just huge pushes from their publishers, which has been awesome. But with smaller houses, it's just the resources aren't there, you know?
Yeah, so you're going to be doing a lot of legwork, whether you're traditional or self-published, but I think it certainly helps to say, you know, I'm with this publisher. That would definitely help you sell yourself to other people easier.
And a lot of times today you're seeing indies creating their own publishing label so yeah. that when they approach, say, a bookstore who may have some prejudice against it, they're showing up as a, you know, small publisher. Rather than just saying, hey, I published a book, it's by me, because it gives you a little bit more clout. It's that perception. Somebody else published me. I'm not saying this myself, even though you are.
I think that's really smart. I mean, I think that for better, for worse, for some reason, having the imprimatur of a publishing house makes a big difference.
Definitely.
Now, speaking of, you know, coming, I can talk, I really can, of upcoming releases and planning your release. Elizabeth, how are you planning your release?
So my university has been really supportive and helpful. My creative writing advisor is hoping to make some sort of event partnered with my university. And so it might be something, I'm debating between a local bookstore or something at my college, maybe both, we'll see. But at least I know I'll have the support of my creative writing department to help set something up. But I'm considering maybe partnering with a local author in the Central Georgia area and setting up something else, maybe in addition to or instead. Also, coming from a smaller press, I definitely have I have a great publicist. I really do, and she's been super helpful pitching me to conferences and answering any questions I have. But like with any publishing house, I understand that a lot of this is going to be on me, and that's okay. So I'm sort of, now that I'm about 6 months out, I'm trying to sort of take all my observations that I've had watching other Electric 18s going through this process and figuring out who I'm going to send ARCs to and exactly what's going to go down at my book launch. So I'm just now entering, I think, the pre-release stage where things need to start happening. I've done a few blog interviews with, like on Tumblr and stuff, and hopefully more will come in the coming months.
I think go ahead. I was going to say one thing that really helped, I don't know if it helps with book sales specifically, but reviews, like video reviews, people talking about your work. I have a business partner of mine. He got a really good review on a really popular site on YouTube. And in one day he got like 67 sales in like one afternoon. And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
So, and you know, I think the more people talking about your work, the better, obviously. So I think,
You're right. I should absolutely try to connect with some YouTubers because they've got a lot of sway, especially.
Yeah, I have not done that. This is the first YouTube thing I've ever done. So
YouTube exciting. Are a huge thing, like all across the board, whether it's movie reviewers, book reviewers, there are a lot of them out there. And if you can get them to positively review you, or, you know, not even have to be positive, just a review.
Right.
Sometimes even a negative can get people talking. It can, you know, give you that extra push, and then again, eyes on your book. People recognize your book because they saw it on someone's show.
Yeah, very true.
And now, are you guys, once you, you know, once you're more set and the book is launched and stuff, are you guys planning to go to any conventions or any book festivals? Do you guys have any dates coming up that we can tell our viewers?
I don't have anything set in stone yet. I'm still pretty far away from release, so I'm not sure if I'll have anything super soon, but I'm definitely hoping to also go to the New York Teen Author Festival next spring is what we're looking at. There's a few others that we're in the works with and talking with, but nothing has been finalized, but I would definitely love to set some up, especially in the first 2 to 3 months post-release.
Definitely. Conventions can be an excellent way to, you know, meet your readers, meet your potential readers, make friends and stuff. That's how I met Katie, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. It's another networking opportunity as well as a sales outlet, as well as a learning opportunity, depending on the conventions you go to. If you go to some that allow for book sales, but also have panels and have, you know, editors doing page reads and things like that, you could really make a full weekend of, you know, learning and selling at the same time.
Plus you get the experience of being there where you can see all the, you know, the cool cosplay and you can talk to, you know, who knows who will show up to your booth is my philosophy. It's like, you never know who's going to show up next.
Speaking of not knowing who's going to show up next, in our live chat right now, we've got Joe with Go Indie Now, and he does he has a multiple show listing on his channel, and he just said they are both welcome to do a reading on my new release or interview segment on his flagship show anytime, so I will pass along his information.
Thank you, Joe.
That would be awesome.
You never know who's listening out there. So that's an awesome thing, you know, getting out there, getting your recognition, talking about your book, getting more people to see it, getting more people to read it. It's all important. And whether you're indie or whether you're traditional, it's clear you have to do that. You have to do that legwork.
And I think even...
Yeah, it's just not negotiable.
Also, just talking about your work and you know, letting your passion come through, I think that inspires a lot of people to be curious about your work.
And it can be fun. Like, it can be fun to, like, talk to people about weird ideas you have about writing, just that you haven't really had a reason to talk about to other people, because people who are not writers or readers are not really all that interested in your ideas about genre elasticity, unless, like, you're not, like, at a party being like, can I talk to you about my feelings about genre elasticity. Like, so it's nice to have that outlet.
Absolutely. You know what else is funny is one of the most common things that I hear at conventions is people are like, I could never write a book. How are you guys doing this? Like, I could never be that organized or disciplined. And I'm like, you just do it.
Yeah.
Butt in chair and write the story.
Yep. Just
By painstaking inch.
Yep.
Well, and honestly, the writing part is probably the easiest. It's the getting out there and marketing the book that is really hard. And I don't know about you guys, but as an introvert by nature, talking to other people and trying to sell my book is the hardest thing for me to do. So when I go to conventions, I really have to turn it on for that whole time and really force myself to get out there. And it's hard to do. And by the end of the day, you're completely drained because you've used every ounce of your internal resources to get through that day.
Oh, yeah. I understand completely. I lost it. I went to AOLA this year in Denver because actually Flux authors had arranged a panel and the lovely Kim Chance asked me to be on. And Kim Chance of Keeper. I went and I roomed with somebody I met through the Electric 18s. But by the end of like the first day, at one point, I just kind of shut down and completely. I was like, I feel invisible and I will let the introvert thing. I definitely relate to, and that took me a long time to figure out about myself because I'm not shy, but I am extremely introverted. And I think that's a very like weird combination to take out into the world when you're trying to talk about your work. So it's definitely a thing that you have to like be prepared to interact with just even on your own, even in your own head.
And sometimes it can be completely like overstimulating. So for me, it's like, sometimes you just need to walk away, clear your head, get away from the noise for a bit, and then go back into it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thankfully, I think I'm a bit more extroverted by nature, so I'm totally fine talking to people. I just need to work on how to talk about my work specifically, because I'm still like not always sure how to describe it. I feel self-conscious a lot. So yeah, at least I have a few months to figure that out before I have to start going to these conferences. So fingers crossed.
You'll fall into a rhythm though, after a while, when you've got that pitch kind of ingrained in and you know how to talk about the book, it becomes a second nature. You know, when you're at a conference and somebody does walk up and oh, tell me about your book, and you can just fire it off right then and there, cause you've said it 100 times earlier that day.
Very true.
It becomes easier and easier. And you know, it also helps too, just to laugh at yourself. If you make a mistake, laugh it off, try again. Cause we're all human. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to trip over our words.
Yeah, that was one thing that I think was really important to learn, is that there's really no way from one thing that you're going to tank your whole career. It just, there's not one fuck up that, sorry, I don't, it's live. But there's not like one screw up that's going to make you be like, okay, I'm dead. I messed up that answer to a live blog chat, and now I'm dead. And I will never recover from it. I spoke weirdly to that one bookseller and now I'm dead and I will never recover from it. It just doesn't exist.
And who knows, people might dig your quirks. Like, I don't remember who it was, but Katie was telling me that there's a guy who is a big intimidating guy. And when he sells his work at shows, he just goes, yo, come here, buy my shit. It works for him.
Who was that?
I don't remember.
I think it was like the first season we did the show, we interviewed him. Who was it?
I don't remember.
That's really funny.
I want to say he was like a horror guy.
Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, you just play to your strengths. If you're quippy, then throw out some funny one-liners at people. You know, whatever works for you, as long as you're, you know, being yourself and you're accepting that life isn't perfect.
Right. So I want to know for both of you, for both Elizabeth and Maxine, how long have you guys been working on your book, and what sort of sparked it?
That's a good, I worked on The Accidental Bad Girl for a really, long time. The way that I always tell people about it is I started this with a man who is now my husband. Now, I mean, granted, we did not date very long before we got married, but still, it's been quite some time. And I think that that was because I had to really struggle with the idea of being disciplined enough to put enough words on the page to be a writer. And so to do that, I had to institute a very specific protocol, which, because I'm throughout my adolescence, I had to see actual specialists. Like I had three different teachers independently institute mandatory backpack checks just to make sure that like papers weren't just ripped up all over my bag. Like I was very, very disorganized. So I've had to come up with a lot of really strict protocols for myself to really get anything done. And those include just random adverbs that make up the total. And they don't have to be good. You can't fix what you don't write, became my mantra. And it was just 500 words a day. And I gave myself a day off. And that took a long time because I didn't know how to write a novel. And I used the exact same method for the book that we're about to go on submission with now. This book is 25% longer, took me a little under a year, maybe. So I don't know the math of how that worked out using the exact same methodology. Maybe it's just more efficient. Maybe I wasn't being as disciplined as I thought, but.
Well, you have a system now in place. Like the first book with The Accidental Bad Girl, you were learning everything and now you have your process. And if you stick to that process, it sounds like it's working beautifully for you. So that's awesome.
I also outlined a lot more with the second book. I did not really outline at all with The Accidental Bad Girl. And I think a lot of people are really resistant to outlining because they think it's going to take all the fun out of writing, which is, I understand that way of thinking, but it's a fallacy. It's real because eventually you are going to need to know what the beginning, middle, and end is. So I went back to the drawing board and was like, what is story structure and how do I make sure that like the motivations make sense? Because that was one of the first things that people always told me is the motivations don't make sense. So I was like, I'm just going to, as an experiment, make sure that the motivation is prominent. It's like paramount in everything I write in this project. And that really propelled it further, I think, faster than it would have.
Good. And it's really easy to get hung up on like, you know, you have an idea and you're all excited and then you start working on it. And then that a burst of excitement just sort of, you know, fizzles out. So you got to keep going, you know, and every step is successively harder than the last. Like editing, oh my God. Editing is like the most boring thing, but it's crucial. It's all crucial.
Yeah, that's the actual work is the, like I always say, you can't fix what you don't write. You know, it's getting like just vomiting the words on the page. That's just the prerequisite for the actual work, you know?
Absolutely. And so how long did you work on this book? I mean, you know, between initial idea and now, like how long ago was that it started?
Oh, wait, sorry, is this me? No, that was Maxine, sorry.
Probably between like starting, like sitting down and writing the first page and now 6 years.
6 years. Wow. And now you said that your next book only took you a year and it's longer than your first one. See, you got the process. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, that was a real relief. It was like, oh, I just do this now. This is just the thing I do. It wasn't like this weird fluke that I did once, you know, so that was a real relief.
The method to the madness.
Everyone's got their own system too.
And what about,
works for you?
What about you, Elizabeth? How long ago did you start Outrun the Wind?
So I started. I first started Outrun the Wind probably the summer before my freshman year of college. So summer of 2016. And so freshman year was pretty much the. Thankfully, I'm a pretty disciplined writer, I guess, or consistent enough that I was able to draft it till it was decent and get feedback from my critique partners within about 5 to 6 months. And then, let's see. And so then it was fall of my sophomore year this past October that it got acquired by Flux. So it was relatively fast, I guess. About Around the Wind was not the first book I wrote, though. So senior year of high school, back in 2015, 2016, I wrote my first novel, but sort of gave myself permission to fail miserably because I knew I had been saying since elementary school that I wanted to be an author, but I had never committed enough to actually finish something. So I'm like, I just need to finish something. And that taught me the most out of any writing class I've ever taken, just finishing something. And even though it was kind of terrible, I learned so much. So when I wrote Outrun the Wind, not only did I have a very thorough outline before I started writing, which probably helped speed along the process, but I also had that terrible first novel to sort of tell me what not to do this time. And so it worked out better.
Well, good.
That allow yourself to fail, that's something that it works along with what I always tell people when I do talks and discussions about writing, is your first draft is supposed to suck. So when you write, it's okay to word spew. It's okay to throw it all out there on the page because you can't, like you said, Maxine, you can't fix what you haven't written. Don't go into that editing phase until you actually have a story, because that's what stops most people. They're like, I want to write, but they're so focused on making that first draft perfect, they can never get to the end. So yeah. Letting yourself accept the fact that first draft is going to suck and just get the story out there is a key that a lot of people need to actually write the novel they've been dying to write.
But it's not just that. It's also, you got to let all these possibilities, you got to flirt with all these possibilities. You know, it's not until you're editing that the story has to make sense and has to be bound by, you know, the plot and the rules that you've set up. Up until that point, you know, you can really just go wild. And then when you start, you know, when you need to start cutting it out in the editing phase, that's when you're like, okay, well, I got to tweak this, lose this, refine this, you know, and that's the real work, but it's all part of it.
Sometimes whole chapters get deleted or moved or reorganized, you know, to fit the plot, but at least you have it there to work with. And that's the really big thing. You have to have it there.
Yep.
And I think a lot of you guys are illustrating the same thing. Once you've got the idea of how to write the story, your next one becomes easier. You've got your system. You know what works for you as a writer. So the next book comes out faster. And the next book comes out faster because you're able to hone in on your style. You know how to work it. And you can, you know, have the discipline you need to make it work to the end. Now, speaking of that, do you guys have sequels in the works already? I know, Maxine, you said you're going to be shopping a book.
Yeah, which is not a sequel, actually. It's actually in an entirely different, I mean, it's YA, but it's an entirely different genre. It's The Accidental Bad Girl is contemporary kind of dark comedy noir. And what I've been working on now is a fantasy pastiche. So it's an entirely different genre, mm-hmm. which is, it's actually more my area in terms of what I grew up loving to read. Fantasy and science fiction is really, I'm very surprised that like a crime novel is the first thing that I ended up writing. So I'm excited about, I mean, you guys are nerds, so I can tell you when it's, I don't really know why you're not supposed to say what it is you're working on. I think maybe some people are superstitious about it, but
it's a curse. You don't talk about what you're working on until you finish.
I already told everybody at this event last night. So, I mean,
it's not like you gave everything away. You just said it's a fantasy novel. I mean, I feel like you could give us a little bit more to go off of.
Yeah. Well, so I was about to say, you guys are nerds. So you know that how in every sort of old-fashioned fantasy novel, there's the tavern wench. It's the same character mm-hmm. in every single novel. It's, you know, described the same. The sort of her verbal style is always the same. Her concerns are always the same. The way she relates to the other characters are always the same. And she's always my favorite character. Like always. I always just want to hang out with the tavern witch. And she never really gets to leave the tavern. She never really gets her own story. I mean, like Tika in the Dragonlance, books is the closest, but even then she's like hitting people with a frying pan, you know, it's like, she's not really doing her own thing. So it's following a tavern wench on her adventure to go to the capital to try and reverse a document that took her in away from her. So that's what I'm working on. And it's, hopefully funny. And, yeah.
Now, let me ask you this before we jump on to you, Elizabeth. Just because this is a subject we've also touched on a lot, our other co-host, Jason, recently signed on with a publisher, and he was told he was splintering his fan base because he writes in multiple genres. And so they warned him that they weren't going to take anything but this specific genre from him when they signed him on. Has your publisher said anything like that to you?
No, and I'm very lucky about that. This is something we've actually talked a lot about in our the Facebook group for the debuts, because a lot of us are very interested in writing a lot of genres. I think that that's one reason, to go back to what I was saying about genre elasticity, I think that that's one reason why a lot of people who write YA are drawn to writing YA, is that you can mash up a lot of different things in a way that for some reason is not as acceptable when you're writing for adult mainstream audiences. For some reason, people just don't accept it. Like, you can't have Jane Eyre in space. And, like, you know, it's harder, you know, for some reason, there's a certain amount of mashing of genres, which is what I really love to do, that is allowable in YA. And that definitely did come up. Like, people have warned me, you have to keep on writing in noir. You have, and even my agent was like, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't totally buy that you can write fantasy. And then I wrote it and she was like, okay, never mind. You can write fantasy. It's fine. You can do that. But, like, she was like, totally honest with you, I am very skeptical about this entire venture. Like, she was very upfront with me about it. But there's people who I love, like Mindy McGinnis or even Libba Bray, who jump around the genres all the time. And that's part of what I like about them as a reader, is that I'm never really sure what I'm going to get with them. So I'm hoping that it's increasingly a plus that you can have a lot of different interests as a writer, because I know that I have a lot of interests as a reader.
Okay. That's a good point. I'm glad you made that. Now let's go over to, Elizabeth, tell us about what you've got in the works. Are you writing sequels? Are you shopping out already?
So Outrun the Wind is a standalone, but going back to my terrible first novel, actually takes place in the same universe, question mark? Or, like, the minor character, one of the minor characters from Outrun the Wind was one of the major characters in my terrible first novel, and I've sort of now, with hindsight, seeing where the problems were and reworking them. So I am throwing together another proposal right now for Flux, because I would ideally like to be with them for a second book, but we'll see. I'm waiting on feedback right now from my critique partners on my proposal, and then I'll work with that and maybe send that along sometime soon, but we will see how it goes.
As far as career trajectory goes, are you guys still going to be writing more books, or is this kind of just on the side?
I would love to keep writing books as much and as often as I can. I'll probably need a day job, I'm sure, once I graduate college, but we'll see. Definitely.
I do have a day job. Yeah, I do have a day job. Ideally, I would like to be continuing to write books. I would like to be allowed to write more books.
It's a hard business to really make work for you. And especially now that the market is more flooded than ever, you know, not only the traditional marketplace, but the indie marketplace, there are so many books. It's hard now for readers to find all of the stuff that's out there, which is why marketing becomes so much more important. And that's why a lot of that falls to the individual author, whether they're traditional or not. So it really tends to be those who stick it out the longest tend to work, but it's a lot of work to do.
But I like following everybody's journey. I like seeing, like for example, you and Jason. I love seeing, you know, oh, I've got this new book. Like, your new covers, like, oh, I love them.
They did come out good. I got the proof right here. So I'll show you. That one is my this one
pretty.
Officially releases on June 5th, and then the second one releases on July 17th, I think. I got to double check the dates. But yeah, this one is my new baby.
She looks like you.
That's what my mom said, too. I was like, yeah, she looks like me if I lost 20 pounds, grew a couple inches, and maybe fixed my hair every so often. Sure.
Well, I was very excited when you showed us those. I was like, oh my gosh, those are wonderful.
The cover artist that I work with really took direction well. And I gave her the blurb, And I told her that it was a mashup of Supernatural meets Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And she ran with it. I mean, she, you know, got the whole like Jason Bourne feel. The letters, you can't really tell in the on the video here, but she actually spells out what the asset agency stands for behind the cityscape here. I mean, there are so many elements she put in here that I was just so happy with.
It has a grand, like the way that it's composed, it looks very big. Like I could see that as a movie poster or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really good. And then that actually brings us to another topic. Working with either a small press, big press, what have you, you don't get to select your cover artists usually, but how much input do you have on the covers?
So,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
So I got very lucky with Flux. They do a great job at making sure that the author is somewhat involved. Obviously it's their decision. But basically, they had me sort of throw together some Pinterest boards of my main characters and just for the novel's like aesthetic as a whole. And I sent those along to them. They asked me if there were any other YA covers that I really liked and admired that they could use as inspiration. And obviously, they have their own sort of pulse on what covers are doing well and different trends in YA. And so my cover designer came up with three totally different concepts. And then I was allowed to sort of pick my favorite. And then, I mean, my editor had a voice as well. And I wasn't the only vote, but basically we were able to narrow it down to one favorite of those three concepts that he came up with. And we were able to do some minor suggestions and tweaking. And yeah, honestly,
So you really got to have more of that hands-on experience, and that's kind of what a lot of people worry about. They don't know if they're going to be able to do that, or if they're just going to be told, this is your cover, and that's it.
I'm sorry, I think can you repeat that sentence one more time? I think I was
frozen. Did you cut out?
Yeah, she was glitched for a second.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, basically what I'm saying is a lot of people don't know how much they're going to be able to input onto the cover. So it's good to hear that kind of feedback that you were able to really have a hands-on experience.
Yes. Yeah. I was super worried about that too, going into it, but I had nothing to worry about.
And Maxine?
For me, I wasn't really worried because the one thing that I knew, because I haven't worked with Abrams in a professional capacity before, I knew that it was going to look good. I wasn't concerned about it looking good. There were two elements that were kind of curveball. I mean, when they showed me the initial thing, I was like, fine, happy. I'll take it. I'm good with it. Then actually Barnes & Noble stepped in and asked for changes. And yeah, it was interesting. I have to say, every time I've heard of Barnes & Noble stepping in and saying, can you change this? It's always been for the better. Maybe some people will disagree with me, but generally, so basically what they did is they just wanted to invert the color scheme. So what it was originally was like the background's pale pink and bad girl is spelled out in this kind of like fuzzy black thing, and they basically just inverted that. So now it's a black background and bad girl is in hot pink, and I actually think it looks, as happy as I was with the first design, I actually think it looks a million times better in black and hot pink than it did in pale pink and black.
I'm looking at it right now, and yeah, I agree. I like this this like nail polish is sort of, it could be blood.
That was always there. Yeah, and that's raised. You can't really tell from the image, but like that is a raised foil, which I love. I think it's so cool.
You have it in hard.
The one thing that they did let me have some input in, which I was that I had to ask about it. On the sides, like on the back and on the flaps, there are all these little doodles.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a diary or like a journal.
Yeah, and yeah. I wasn't crazy about the doodles to begin with. To be honest, I like them now, but I wasn't crazy about them. And I was like, is there any way we can reduce them? And they were like, no, here's why. There's too much negative space. And I was like, all right, fair enough. Can I tell you what the doodle should be? Because I thought they were very random initially. They were just sort of weird doodles that had nothing to do with the book. So, and they were like, oh, absolutely. Why didn't we even think of that? And I like wrote up a bunch of doodles and sent it to them, and they were like, yeah, we can replace these. These will be fine. And so that was kind of a, like, I didn't have all of the control in the world, but I had control where it counted, or at least I had input where it counted, because they want you to be happy with the cover. They don't want you to hate it. But I think that had I said, I hate this, they probably would have been like, we're really sorry you hate it, but we're going with it. Right. You know? Yeah,
this is us, so there you go. Well, and they do, being the publisher, they do tend to have a finger on the pulse of what is selling, and especially Barnes & Noble. That's really shocking to hear that Barnes & Noble steps in every so often and says, no, 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 do this, make this change.
That surprised me, too. Apparently, it's weirdly common. That surprised me, too.
But if you think about it, I mean, they are on the front line selling the books. They know what attracts people and, you know, what's going to be eye-catching. And I think that's exactly why they told you to invert the colors, or told the publisher to invert the colors, because it does make it that much more eye-catching.
Yeah, that was a very good choice. And I love, if you wanted to go and, like, make shirts or something, or, like, journals or some sort of, like, there's a lot that you can pluck from the cover to do that with.
I don't have access to, like, the native files, because the cover designer has access to the native files. So I couldn't, like, polish off and use it, which is a disadvantage if you're self-publishing or indeed have access to those native files and you can do really cool things. Cover itself and do what I want with it. I put it on stickers and things like that. But no, I couldn't just, I had asked about that too, because I thought that would have been neat if I could have just plucked out the nail polish and, like, put it on something, but I couldn't, unfortunately. I did sort of do a little Photoshop trickery at one point with the cover image and turned it into a sticker, which nobody called me on. So I think it's allowed.
Yeah, that brings up a really good point, because a lot of authors, especially when you go to a trade show or you go to, like, a Comic-Con to sell your books, people expect to see swag, or they expect to see, you know, cutesy items. Or when you're doing a release party, you have extra items like bookmarks and pins and whatnot. How do you approach making those items if you don't have the artwork?
Well, I have, like, the cover image itself, and I could do whatever I wanted with that. And luckily, my cover is just it's a very graphic cover. So it was easier enough to just use it as a logo in a way that without having to pick it apart too much. But yeah, that had occurred. But I'm not a very designy person. I'm not very good at it. My husband actually designed my bookmarks, because he saw me, like, fiddling with the U-printing thing, and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing." And he sat down and did it for me.
But I like a lot of these little pieces. Like, I love the heart at the top, the, like, sharp heart. I like the nail polish. And then some of these doodles on the back, like, if you were to just sort of smash, like, you know, 6 or 7 of these elements together, and you have, like, the big heart in the middle, that would look really cool.
Like, yeah, that would be a neat t-shirt. Now that you're mentioning that, that sounds like a really good t-shirt.
You're talking to a graphic artist right there.
Yeah, sadly, this is not my area. I used to draw and paint, but, like, I was never, because I loved comic books and I loved cartoons, and so I would do it for fun, but I was no native skill in that area whatsoever.
Well, if your husband, you know, if you want to get your husband to help you, you know, it would be like, you have these in high res, right? You have
myself in high res.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could, if you have, if you just have Photoshop, you can steal a lot of elements, paste them into a new document and arrange them however you want. Your husband, if he knows just a little bit about Photoshop, he should be able to help you with that.
Yeah, like he designs video games for fun on his spare time, so he knows a little bit about it. But yeah,
there you go. Like, I mean, I see so many little possibilities with just this cover here in the back.
Yeah, swag is interesting, because there's trends. Like, apparently now the new thing in YA swag is enamel pins. I don't know if you've ever tried to order custom enamel pins. They are hugely expensive.
of swag, I have to show you guys this, because I'm going to Phoenix next week. And one of the swag items I got from the last book series, I found a metal printer, and they're local. and they print up bookmark. Oh,
wow. What?
And so I went to the designer and I said, give me a bookmark sized cutout of this cover. And there's three of them, so I'll show you all three. And I can use this to make bookmarks. And she was like, yeah, absolutely. And so she sent me.
Wow. That looks amazing.
And they are so cool. So this is what I'm taking with me. And this is the best one right here. I'm taking this one with me as my swag items. For anyone who buys copies of the book, they will get a free metal bookmark as opposed to the paper ones, which I always have paper on me. But the metal ones are really special.
Yeah, that's smart.
Like something you gotta hold on to that,
and they're thick too. I mean they're substantial. It's not just a little flimsy piece of metal. It's got some weight to it. It's nice and it's so shiny. It picks up the light. But that becomes one of my swag items to try and creatively bring more attention to the book series when I go to a show, because that'll catch the light as people are walking by.
I want one. I want one of all of them.
And that's what I want people to say.
If there's any left after the show, dibs.
Okay. All right. let's throw the question over to you, Elizabeth. And I think that's it for our show tonight. So you can close us out with this question. Swag items, go.
Have not had to deal with that yet, but on the horizon, I'm not sure... Maxine, when do you recommend I should be printing these things or starting to design them? Like, I don't know. Sometime this summer, definitely.
I did them late. I didn't even get them in time for ALA, I went to ALA, and then the day I landed in Denver, my husband texted me. He was like, your bookmarks just came. And I was like,
oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's real fun.
Don't let me.
Being a journalism major means I have access to a lot of, good Photoshop type software at my school, which will hopefully help, and lots of graphic design knowledge in abundance, not with me really, but with my other classmates and stuff. So I'll figure something out. Hopefully.
There's a website that I used when I print bookmarks and business cards. They're really inexpensive and they are really fast, which is important. And it's gotprint.com.
Okay.
Say that again.
gotprint.com. Their prices are perfect. Their speed in getting things printed is excellent. And you can upload files and save them to your account there so that later on, if you need to print some more, it's just a quick click and ship.
Okay.
And
I'll definitely check that out.
You have a lot of like you have the mythology symbols that you can play with. You have so much to play
with. That's true.
It's like a Greek retelling. Well, you can reinterpret some, some icons or something like that and twist it to how you want them.
Mm-hmm.
You have a library of options there. So
yes.
Just start Googling symbols that are sort of, like you have huntresses, right? So look up symbols for Hunter, look up symbols for Artemis, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just mash those together into something new, put your name on it. Yeah. You're solid.
All right. Yeah. Bow and arrow, the whole whatever.
All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode of Spilling Ink. Elizabeth and Tammy, thank you so much for Elizabeth and Tammy. Elizabeth and Max, laugh at yourself when you make a mistake. Right there. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us.
It's been really fun.
Yes. Thank you.
And Elizabeth, we hope to catch up with you later in the year when you do your release. So definitely talk to us. I will send both of you guys Joe's information from Go Indie Now, since he offered to let you guys come on and do a reading or do an interview.
You.
So you'll expect an email from me soon on that.
Okay.
And David, thanks for coming back. It's been a long time, dude. We got to get you back on more.
Yeah. Sorry. Things are slowing down now. So I will be around. I will. I promise.
I'm going to hold you to that.
I will.
And for all of our viewers out there, make sure you subscribe, click like, be sure to share our videos, and we will see you again, not next week because next week is Phoenix Comic Con, but the week after with new authors to introduce you to and more discussion about the publishing industry. Thanks for watching.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.